Hey loves, just a quick note before we dive into this week's episode. The next three episodes of Adulting with Ebony are all guest episodes. They were recorded just after I moved to Spain and during the quarantine period. The audio isn't as good as you're used to on the show, but the conversations are all phenomenal, so I hope you enjoy them. After those three episodes, we're moving to a new format, which I'll tell you more about soon. If you want to make sure that you don't miss anything, we've got special announcements coming up, please go to ebonyallard.com, scroll to the bottom of the page and you will see an opt-in box for the Monday pep talk, and we'll make sure that you get everything that you need there. Or come and follow me on Instagram where I share stories every day and I'll make sure that you know all about the new and exciting thing. Now though, I hope you enjoy this episode. Hi, welcome to Adulting with Ebony, the weekly podcast where my guests and I explore what it means and takes to be a kick-ass and kind adult these days. Expect deep, real and raw, as no topic is out of bounds. We want lives and businesses that are profitable, sustainable and fun. We want lives that feel as good on the inside as they perhaps look on the outside. And that means adulting the fuck up. I'm Ebony Allard. I'm an award-winning coach, author, and speaker. And if you're ready to implement, go to m2m365.club. For now, though, let's get on with the show. Hey, everyone. Welcome to this week's episode of Adulting with Ebony. Today, I am joined by Lane Freefall, who is a tattooer, a wild traveller, a free spirit, and a really good friend of mine. Hey, Lane.
Yay. Hello.
I'm really happy that we get to have this conversation.
Yeah, me too.
Yeah. I'm going to start how I start all of these combos. What does adulting or adulting mean to you?
Oh, God. I think, like, the sad thing is I feel like it's just all about working and paying bills and things like that, which kind of breaks my heart. And I was like, I was just about to tell you earlier when it was just like, I was brushing my teeth and I had that like epiphany. I had that moment and I remembered exactly the moment when I was an adult, and it was just, I was with my housemate and I woke up and I had to like open letters, and then there was this bill and it was just like the electricity bill. And then there was the phone bill. And I just remember looking at her and I just went, oh, when did this all happen? And it was just that moment where I went, this is it. This is me as an adult now. Like, I'm not in school. I'm not in college. I'm not paying for it. Like, I'm not, you know, like, it's, I actually have a job, and my life just means I have to work and make sure I can afford to pay for things and just keep a roof over my head. And that really, really broke my heart. But I've got to say, I don't think I'm an adult at all. Like, I think the older I get, the more immature I get in so many ways, and it's quite hilarious.
I guess because you are one of the most, I guess, free-spirited, like, people that I know. And so It's interesting for me that adulting is like all about responsibility and like knuckling down and conforming for you, because I don't, and anyone else looking at you or looking at your life would not think, oh yeah, this woman is conforming.
Yeah, it's a weird one. I think it's like, it's a lot to do with like cultural differences as well, you know what I mean? It's just that like I'm a British born Chinese, and I feel like my mum always had this like difficulty of wavering between the two, you know. It's like, especially because, you know, I'm born in 1984, so, and I'm the first generation to be born in England, so you have this really difficult mark of wanting your children to be as English as possible so they don't get bullied, they don't feel awkward, and they could just fit in. And then at the same time, you know, at home my mom was just there like, you know, don't ever forget who you are. You've got to be Chinese. Make sure you've got, you know, surround yourself with Chinese friends and all these things. And culturally it means to be, especially being a woman, you know, it's about being a doting wife, a good cleaner, you know, like all these little things. And obviously the stereotype of being highly educated and making sure that you're going to be, you know, a well-paid CEO or lawyer or accountant. Like, it really is, whenever you hear it from on TV shows or radio, and it's like, it's a joke, it's because it's so true. It's like the ultimate stereotype. So, you know, I was kind of really mentally ingrained to just be the best wife, be really doting, be like, you know, the you know, just really responsible. And then I left home when I was 16, which in hindsight really is just a child, really. But I was so, I guess, again, it was like I left and I managed to go to college and I managed to work at the same time and pay rent, which is really crazy when you think about it. You know, I'm 16 years old and I'm already trying to be an adult then. And I was doing everything I could possibly do to never go home. And it's not because my parents weren't caring. They loved me dearly, but I didn't get along with my stepdad at the time. And my mom and I just weren't seeing eye to eye. You know, I think it's just a very typical, you know, teenage angst thing to do. It's like, well, I'm leaving home. And I always look back and I always just think about how that conversation went with my mom and how mature it was to just be able to see the reality of what the future would be anyway, which is I'm going to grow up, I'm going to go out and work and I'm going to take care of myself and I'm going to have my own family. So, you know, why would I hold back now if me being here is causing such a, you know, such an ordeal, you know what I mean? So I think already I was already quite in my head, very mature about that. But yeah, again, it's like, you know, it's a cultural thing where if you ever go home with your tail between your legs, your parents are just going to hold that over you forever. They're just always going to be there like, you couldn't make it without me. You couldn't do it without me. And look at everything I've given you and all this stuff. And I was just like, oh, I can't do that. I just have to do this by myself. Like, I don't care how hard it is. I'm going to prove to them that I can do it and I can be an adult and I can make things happen. So that's why I think in my mind, that's why like that's about being an adult.
Yeah, but I see that. Time,
you know, I just want to be happy. I think that's the most important thing about being, you know, but just about life. And I think that's what makes me so, you know, free about everything. Yeah.
When did, and how, so one of the first things that people will notice when they see you, apart from the fact that you are bloody gorgeous.
Thank you.
is how heavily tattooed you are. And it's not something that I need to bring up generally, but I also feel like, again, with a cultural thing, it's kind of a big deal, right?
Yeah, very. Yeah, my parents don't approve of the way I look at all. Most Chinese people wouldn't, or Asian people wouldn't. Again, it's that cliche of just being, you know, it's, tattoos have always been associated with, well, not always, I think like as years went on, it's always been associated with, you know, triads and gangs and things like that.
Yeah.
And I think it was the case. I think that's not just in Asian culture. I think it's just like all around the world. It's always been like that. You know, you're either like a biker or whatever and all that stuff.
And was there a piece about belonging for you in it? Like, when did you start getting tattooed and when did you start tattooing?
I actually got my first tattoo when I was 15. It was back then the driver's license were only paper. There was no photo to it. So I used my sister's driver's license and I knew the tattoo shop knew very well how old I was because I walked past in my school uniform all the time. It was pretty obvious. But they obviously, you know, it's the 90s, they couldn't care less really. And I got it because, oh my God, it's so childish. Jodie Willoughby got her tongue pierced in school and she thought she was so cool. And I was like, I'm going to go get tattooed. and I did, but my first tattoo was like you could imagine like a full-on 90s tribal little black dragon on the small of my back.
Do you still have it?
Okay. No, I wish I did. I really wish I did. And I really wanted to keep it because it was mine, you know. It's like it was my first ever tattoo. But I have a full Japanese back piece now and it would look like a ridiculous worm amongst this kois that I have on my back. So I had to cover it up. But otherwise I still love it because it made such a story and it was such a stamp in my life, you know. Yeah. And
I don't have the first piece. So my first one was also a tiny 90s like Celtic piece on my shoulder, which is now just now under flowers and a back piece. But on my right and the small of my back, I have a 90s tramp stamp, like a beautiful.
But it's funny though, like, don't you just, I don't know, I think no matter how much we look at it and go like, oh god, it was like a tramp stamp, it was this and that, whatever, you still love it. And it was such a crazy time.
I absolutely adore it. It means so much to me. And I won't cover it up purely because of who I was with and what it meant to me at the time. Yeah.
Which I love the most. And the funny thing is like, I think now, like, with so many people who are, you know, getting tattooed because it's cool or it's, you know, it's, I mean, I know more and more models, Insta models, who are getting tattooed just so that they can have some kind of an aesthetic that people recognize them for. But I love that I can look at you and look at your tattoos and just go, I know how old you are. I know what you're thinking at that time. You know what I mean? That we can just know that that was the time and we lived it first time. And I think it's so good.
I think there is something really, like, it, for me, it was about belonging. It was about finding my tribe. Yeah. It was about being in a tattoo shop and hearing the tattoo, like the white noise of tattoo gun, and feeling safe and at home for the first time in my life in a way that I didn't really understand. And it was so important to me. And it never was about the aesthetic. I mean, it kind of was, and there was a part of that, but it was much more about my toughness and belonging and habit and my sovereignty. And
exactly, and that's the funny thing. And I think that's why, like, I think back, and I used to, you know, I used to hang out at Fifth Street when it was still Angelic Hell, and that's where I was at all the time. You know, and I was always hanging out with just, and it's just so crazy to see how far all the tattoos and piercers have gone now. But it's like, when I got into tattooing, you know, the first thing that Thomas, he was, you know, the way he looked at it was, you have to get tattooed. Like, if you want to become a tattooist, you get yourself covered and then you come back, you know, then you come back to me and talk to me about it. Because it was all about how much you love the art more than you love the actual ordeal of being a tattooist, you know what I mean? And I think that, as crazy as a lot of, especially here in America, it's really funny, they don't get it. Like, they really think that, you know, they're in their 30s and 40s, some even 50s, and they still don't have even near the coverage that I have. And it's not to say that I'm better or anything like that, but it just goes to show that my tribe, where I learned to tattoo, you were going to get covered. Like, that's what it's about. And through that, you know, I realized that when I look at people in a different way now, you know, but the more coverage they have, especially if they're around my age, I look at it and I just kind of think, and I want to know what they've been through. You know what I mean? Like, I look at them and I just go, wow, you know, either you must have really hated yourself at one point, or you must have really loved yourself at one point. I think now it's, and it's funny, you can kind of still get that feeling when you look at certain people now who have the, you know, the solid black arm with all the negative flowers that are perfectly done. And I'm just there like, I want to know, even though I know why you got it, and it's not the same reason why I would get it. Like, you know, I want to know, did you complain the whole time you got that done? Like, were you angry enough or upset enough or feeling a certain way to be able to sit there and take it? You know, because that's
so interesting, because I have this conversation with my dad quite a lot, and he's probably listening.
Yeah.
Hey, Dad. I remember when when I first started my tattoo journey, like most people, there was a concern that it was from a place of self-harm.
And
I remember when it changed for him, and I remember when he was like, this is about something bigger for you. This is about a connection with your body and about stepping into your own creative expression and being fully expressed. And it's so cool to have a parent who can see that.
I was going to say, that is so amazing that he can see that and relate to that in that way. I think that's incredible. I love that.
And it's been a real journey for me, right? Like, it definitely started from a place of, I am angry and I hate myself and I hate the world and I hate my body and I have a lot of hate. And it definitely isn't, you know, actually the last tattoo I had was done by you, actually. The last tattoo I had was the swan on my hand, the swallow on my hand. And
did it heal perfectly, by the way?
Of course it healed perfectly.
Yay! I always want to know. I was like, how did it heal?
It healed perfectly. But that, like, for me, like you say, right, tattooing has changed and it's no longer about, I don't know, I feel like it's such a huge thing for people, and it is so interesting that over the time that everybody's relationship to it has changed, and yet you can still see, you can still see the collectors and the kind of travellers from the dabblers or the like, I don't know. I also think there's something really interesting about this assumption that everyone with tattoos knows each other and likes each other and feels the same about tattooing. Like, I find that really fascinating as well.
I think that's to do with the whole kind of, like, obviously, you know, when we first started, or even the people before us, everyone did know each other. You know what I mean? I was trying to explain that to Oliver before about, like, how, you know, conventions, even way before I even dreamed of going to work these things, you know, people would, tattooers just get into each other's cars, drive the distance, and there'd only be about 15 artists. And now it's like, you know, now you have hundreds in one huge room and it's like a meat market, which is awful. You know, I absolutely hate it. I can't stand it anymore. But of course, working is completely different than being a viewer. But I think that's, it's a lot of people who kind of come to get tattooed now, they still have the same thing of wanting to belong, even though it may not be necessarily to our tribe. It's to whoever they're with. And sadly, that could be other influences, or it could be, you know, just friends, like, that they want to fit in with, you know. And I think that's the whole thing, where people still have this, like, idea. It's just like, well, if you're into tattoos, then you probably know my friend. He's got one tattoo and this and that and whatever. Because the people who aren't involved can't associate with that mental thought of just like, no, you know, I don't know everyone in the world. And I definitely don't now. That's the funny thing. I was looking online, and one of the guys I used to work with, not that I never thought he was any good, he's a fantastic tattooist, but he definitely got into it far later than I did. You know, I think by the time I've been tattooing for 8 years, he'd only been tattooing for, like, maybe just his first year, and he's already opened his own shop. And I can imagine the type of people that go to his shop, you know, and that it's so far from what I would ever imagine, because, you know, in my good old days, you know, it just wouldn't happen. You know, you would never dream of opening a tattoo shop unless you've been tattooing for, like, at least 10 years. Like, you know, you earned your stripes, and it was just, they're like, right, you know, and you've got to ask permission, and you've got to, you know, make sure that you have the utter respect of your boss before you to say, like, listen, I'm going to open my shop. It's going to be more than a mile away from you. And I would never dream of doing, and now it's like, no, you know, overnight you can have, like, 5 tattoo shops on the same street. And it just would never happen back in my day. It's so bizarre. It's not
No, I feel like there's a part of tattoo culture, history, the kind of apprenticeship, the whole way that you earn your stripes, that you work mm-hmm. your way up, that kind of thing. Like, I remember being told really clearly, you don't get your hands done, you definitely don't get your knuckles done until you're fucking,
no.
you know, you have full sleeves, right? Until you've earned
it.
You know, the guy who did my hands, like, he was like, I'm not sure. I have 2 full sleeves and a full back piece, and he still wasn't sure. Yeah. And I respect that completely, right?
Absolutely,
And this links me into something that a couple of different tattooers and I were talking about the other day, which is, like, what happens mm-hmm. when you start getting a back piece or a leg piece, or, you know, a big piece with someone.
Yeah.
And then you can't travel anymore, or they move countries, or you fall out with them, or, like, this kind of stuff, like the etiquette mm-hmm. around that. And I mm-hmm. feel like the etiquette around that is starting to change. And I wondered whether you had an opinion on it.
Absolutely. I mean, that's the funny thing. It's like what you were just saying about how, you know, how artists don't do hands, neck, or face, you know, like I was just thinking as soon as you said that, like, I still try to push that value on my customers, no matter how old or how young they are. They walk in and they're like, I want to get this done on my hand, this and that, whatever. And I it's so hard for me because I've spent, this will be my 11th year tattooing in October, which is wild. And it just, you know, I try to push that because that's what I know, you know, it's just that, like, why do you want to get your hand and your neck and your face done? Like, you know, I mean, I have my hands done. And again, it was, by then I'd already, you know, I was pretty tattooed and I was with Thomas and, you know, that whole crew, they're literally head to toe, probably on their third or fourth layer of getting tattoos, like all the way to their eyelids, you know what I mean? And it's just kind of, and yet they still don't have their eyeballs done, thank God. I have to, I do find myself having to bend the rules, you know, like sometimes I look at it and you can just tell, like after so many years, you can just tell the people who walk in, it's just there, like, if I say no, you will go to someone else and get it done. And it's not just about the lack of money, you know, because I really do try my hard to, I'm lucky enough that I make enough money that I don't have to worry about, I have to take in the next person. I do get to pick and choose. And I do have really good loyal customers, which make me really happy. But at the same time, it's just, they're like, if someone comes in and they, you know, obviously they want me to rework something or go over something, I still like to ask who did it.
Yeah.
Purely because if there is by any chance someone I know, I still have the decency to contact said artist and just be like, listen, mate, you know, this is what's happened. I don't want to be like disrespectful to you. If anything, is there a reason why this person doesn't want to go back to you? Is it because you guys fell out? Is this person crazy? Can you just save me some time before I have to find out for myself? Like, these are all the reasons why I wouldn't, you know. But if it's someone I don't know, and if I look at it and I just think, wow, this is clearly done by some scratcher in someone's kitchen or whatever, even if they are working in the shop, which I don't know, I do try to talk them into going back first. And if they give me a valid enough reason, either they've gone, they've disappeared, they've passed away, they're not getting back to me, this and that, or whatever, then I'm like, yeah, sure, okay, cool. I still try my best to stick to what I know, because I do think that, you know, it's so important to be respectful. I would never dream of someone, you know, of someone I know just going off my work without saying anything to me, you know, because I hear that
and I understand it, but I also feel like, and this is something that's changed for me because I very much grew up in the same kind of culture with the same people around me, but essentially it is the collector's art, piece of art by the time it's on their body, right?
Yeah, absolutely. I was gonna follow that through, like just then I was gonna say, like, at the end of the day, you know, your body is not for me to dictate what you do. You know what I mean? And that brings me to, you know, just an example, in 2013, when I was sued by another artist who I know, who was essentially my friend at the time. Wow. You know, and that was, and it wasn't of a tattoo that I'd done. It was because her husband had tattooed me, who was actually my very good friend. He was one of the first people that I'd connected with in the industry before I started tattooing. So when he passed away, she had done a small bit of touch up and adding a bit of color. And I asked her simply because her husband is my friend. You know, I could have easily just gone to any other artist who knew him and paid for that time and got a really good tattoo at the end of it. But I was like, you know what, the majority of it's done. I want her to do it because she is the closest being to my friend who's gone. You know, it doesn't matter about how good she is. It's about that connection. And yet she still had the audacity to sue me on the grounds of copyright after I'd modeled for Diesel. I did a photo shoot. The picture was bought out by Diesel because it was for a book by Diesel. And they used me on packaging for Lovedose Tattoo perfume. Probably one of the happiest moments, because never in my life did I ever imagine that I would ever amount to anything more than just what I did for a living, you know. And this was obviously where it was starting to really kind of have its peak and its rise about being a tattoo person, which was great, you know. But yeah, so she claimed copyright and ownership to that tattoo. And I know, sorry, I know I'm being really long-winded, but it just brings me to the point of just basically, in England, there is no law that says that she can't do that. Because obviously to you and I, it's completely mind-blowing. Because as far as you're concerned, you've paid your artist for a tattoo and essentially you've bought that art piece. It belongs to you. You can do whatever you want with it. You, even if I said to you like, oh, you know, that swallow I did on your hand, I really love it, please don't ever go over it. You know, if you decide to just blacken your entire arm and your hand, why would I have a right to tell you that you can't do that? You bought that tattoo. It's yours. You can do whatever you want. Whether you and I are friends or not, I'm not going to hold a grudge against you. This is just the way it is. You know, like, we're human beings, and you know, these things are, you know, it's you know, it's not to say it's disposable, but it's just more of the fact that it's your body. You know, that's the thing that you own the most.
Yeah, and even if it was just a piece of art that I'd bought off you, right? And then I then wanted to sell them to somebody else, like, I would be allowed to do that. So
of course you can.
It's a whole weird thing, right? It's a whole weird
thing. Well, yeah, and the funniest thing was, the only reason why this whole lawsuit ordeal came to an end, her big lawyers basically sued me saying that she owned copyright. And after all the money that I spent, which basically was everything that I earned from doing that shoot, went back to lawyers to basically, for me to just turn around and realize, I wrote a letter back and I said, well, if you're going to sue me on the grounds of copyright, I will counter sue on the grounds of slavery. Because basically you're telling me that you want to sue me because you own this part of my body that you claim is yours. You want money, saying that this tattoo belongs to you and you deserve money for it. And I was like, well, this, it's on my body now. And if you're going to say that you own this tattoo that's on my body, you say you own my body, and that therefore is slavery. So that's when I was like, that's my counter sue. And that was after like months of trying to talk to lawyers that have absolutely no clue, because they don't have tattoos themselves. They probably do now. I've got many lawyer friends who are covered head to toe now, which is fantastic. And they understand it so much more now. But at that time, my lawyers had no idea. And I'd sit there for hours going through books and magazines trying to figure out, how am I going to get out of this situation? Because England doesn't have a law that says that she doesn't, that's not allowed, you know. Unfortunately, it was actually settled out of court in the end. And Diesel stepped in and basically paid her out, which was very disappointing for me, because I kind of feel like, had that gone to court, now that I know what I know, it would have been completely unprecedented, and we would have set a new law to say, no, you know, this tattoo's on me, it's on my body, and I own it. It's not the tattoo.
Which would change, which would change, like, so many people copying each other's tattoos, or stealing each other, stealing other artists' work and ideas, like, all that kind of thing as well.
Yeah, I mean, obviously, I don't think that's ever really going to change, just because tattooing is, like, it's moving so fast now, and the artists that are coming out really don't have the same... I hate to say it, they don't have the same values as someone who started tattooing, you know, decades ago. And it's funny, because I know some other, you know, artists who do want to tattoo, and when you turn around and tell them, like, well, look, you know, this is the process that I went through, and we all sit there and we're just like being old and bitter, going like, oh, back in my day when I did my apprenticeship, blah 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 blah. And, you know, you can see that these people who want to learn to tattoo that don't get the opportunity are just there going like, it's just so archaic. It's just so rude. Like, why can't I tattoo? And it's just, And after so many years of telling people the reasons why, I've now given up. I've now tried to be more positive, and I just tell people, like, listen, you know, if you want a tattoo, it's going to happen. Don't worry if I tell you you can't. Don't worry if no one else tells you that you're not going to make it, because you know what? There are thousands of people out there who are tattooing who I never thought would, regardless of whether they're not, they're doing it and they're making it happen, because I never imagined I would. And I'm sitting here doing it, and I'm just like, how did that happen? You know, like, if you want it bad enough, it does happen. And yeah. You shouldn't let anyone else tell you otherwise. Doesn't matter if I sit there and think otherwise, it's got nothing to do with me. It's about what you want to do and how far you're going to push it. And it's so easy now. It's so easy.
I feel like there's some really good lessons in there for all sorts of people.
Yeah.
If people want to come check out what you do, find out more about you, where's the best place for them to come?
I mean, obviously right now I'm on lockdown in LA, which is kind of good and kind of bad. But the best way to get in touch is to, I'm going to plug it now. You can go to @silverandsalt on Instagram, SilverAnSalt. So there's no D because someone else took it. otherwise,
I'll make sure that it's all clickable.
Yeah. If you can't remember all that, you could just go to @namefreefall, and then there's a link there. You can just click on the email button, and then it'll just kind of take you straight to my email. Otherwise, you can slide into my DMs. It just takes me a little bit longer to get back to you. But I'm still, not right now, but I'm still traveling constantly. Either in England or Asia or Europe or wherever. So there's always an opportunity to get tattooed, which is great.
Yeah. Thank you for coming and chatting with me. I'm glad we made this work. I mean, it's strange that it took a pandemic to get us time to be able to have a chat.
I know. I'm so glad it happened, though. I'm so glad it happened. This is kind of what I need, though, to force myself to do these things, you know, to not get so wrapped up in just work. And this is, yeah. And it's good because now I get to catch up with you as well, which is really great.
Will you end with me with an I'm an adult, but just a little, it's just a fun thing we do.
Yeah. I'm an adult, but I'm really not. I woke up this morning and I was listening to Disney soundtracks while getting ready. And I was getting so excited because I went, oh, this song's such a great way to start the day. And I don't think that someone who's 36, I don't think that's a really adult thing to do, you know, but I love it and it makes me very
happy. If it helps. We spent today watching the Disney Plus channel all day.
Oh my God. Yeah. That's literally, I have that on all day, every day, and it makes me so happy. So yeah. And watch, you know, they've actually got 3 men and a little baby. So you got to catch up with all that stuff as well.
Okay.
Yeah.
All right. It's amazing. Now. Awesome.
Oh gosh. Yeah. God. It's a massive K-hole. You're going to get stuck in that so bad. It's so good. It's such a good channel.
This has been Adulting with Ebony. I have been Ebony. You have been great. Thank you. Thank you. Thank you for listening, for sharing, for rating and reviewing. If you have enjoyed this free content, please take a moment to rate us, to share an episode, to spread the word on social media, or to come find me on Instagram and tell me what you thought. On Instagram, I am @EbonyAllard, and I will see you in the DMs. Bye.